please take 5 minutes or 4 minutes to make it 5 minutes to first of all speak with your Sakasaki about how you're doing with the no criticism and complaint retreat. And then also, if you have any question, take a minute. It'll be a total of 5 minutes, not more, to write down any question and put it in the our wonderfully decorated with forest flower basket. 5 minutes. Okay. First question is a long one. Contained in Krishna's names are also his form. In one's mind, there also can be many images stored. Could a neophyte devotee expect to find Krishna's form in his name? How to tell when it is real or if it is another attempt of the mind to make japa more interesting? What would be the characteristics of Krishna's form manifesting from his name to a chanter? So, what was the question? Raise your hand if you heard the question. Or were you somewhere else? Everyone come here, or and we'll read it again. Well, there'll be plenty of time to be somewhere else when it's not time to be here. Very deep thought, yes? Don't even worry about it. Contained in Krishna's names are also his form. In one's mind, there are also many images stored. So there's two different points being made there. That in one's mind, there are so many different images, sanskaras, and in Krishna's name is also his form. Could a neophyte devotee expect to find Krishna's form in his name? And what's the answer to that? Could a neophyte devotee expect to find Krishna's form in his name? In other words, if I've understood correctly, will Krishna's form manifest to a neophyte devotee? Neophyte means what? A beginner. Yes. So the answer to that is generally no. And Srila Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarva gives an order for the manifestation of Krishna's name, form, qualities, and character, and lila. So Krishna's name, we take shelter of first, and then Krishna's form manifests. And then after Krishna's form manifests, Krishna's nam, rupa, guna, lila. Very good. And then after Krishna's qualities manifest, naturally, because Krishna's name is the same as his form, so naturally, when we chant Krishna's name, naturally Krishna's form should and will manifest. And then when there's a form, that's not all Krishna is. He's not just a form, but that form is the form of a person. It is not just a shape. So naturally, the qualities of the person manifest, the qualities of Krishna. And then the qualities are always in relationship. Say, Krishna is, what's one of the qualities of Krishna? Merciful. Okay, so you're not merciful in a little box. You're merciful to someone. So that is an act, that is a pastime. Krishna, one of the other qualities of Krishna is what? He plays his flute. So he plays his flute, so there's a flute in that, and he's sitting somewhere, and he's acting, he's calling the cows, he's calling the cowherd boys, he's letting the residents of Vrindavan know that he's coming home. So a pastime is attached naturally to the qualities of Krishna. But there is an order of manifestation, and that is Nam, Rupa, Guna, and Lila. So this is the general principle. But can Krishna's form manifest? Does he have to follow the principle of Krishna's form manifest in our consciousness by the causeless mercy of Krishna? Will we say, you can't do that because in Bhakti Sandarbha, it is said that this is the order? No. Yes? Oh, yes, yes. That was the answer to the overall question. Yes, Krishna can certainly do anything. So if Krishna's form comes to our consciousness, then it is his grace, his kindness. But if we start thinking about it and bring our neophyte consciousness into it, then Krishna's form will unmanifest, certainly, and then mundane concepts and ideas and qualities will manifest. So, how to tell when it is real or if it is another attempt of the mind to make one's japa more interesting? And my answer to that is, don't think these kind of things when you're chanting japa. This is just what the mind starts doing. Is this real or is this imaginary? How am I supposed to tell if it's real or imaginary? Well, I can tell if a table is real because I can bang on it. Let me try bang on the whole on this form of Krishna and see. Or you just start talking to yourself. Don't worry about it. Just chant Krishna's names, and if Krishna's form comes by his kindness, okay. And then if it goes by his kindness, okay. We want to hear Krishna's names. None of the other levels should distract us from Krishna's names, because from our concentration on Krishna. And that perhaps is in a simple way for us to be able to see if it's just another manifestation of the mind, or to what degree it's a manifestation of the mind. Say if we look at the form of Krishna Balaram. Everyone here, look at the form of Krishna Balaram. Now, is this form a manifestation of our mind, or is it a manifestation of Krishna and Balaram? Well, it's certainly going to depend on one's consciousness, because if our consciousness is fully pure, then Krishna and Balaram are actually there. And if our consciousness is just mundane, we're just going to see our own mind. So don't worry about trying to, what's 23% Krishna and Balaram, and what's, if we're adding up to 100, what do we have there? 67 or 77, okay. Of course it's understandable, this is an opinion, because we don't have our mobile phones, we don't have our computers. How could we possibly figure it out? So don't worry about it. Just chant Krishna's names. And what is a good sign is if when we're chanting, and if whatever happens just increases our concentration on Krishna's holy name. That is what we look for. And just try to hear and let Krishna reciprocate. Let our consciousness touch Krishna's names. And then on, is this another attempt of the mind to make japa more interesting? I've gone through stages quite a few years ago when I used to have pictures of Krishna, because I was trying to keep my mind engaged. So then I'd have one picture, then I'd have five pictures, then I'd have 30 pictures, and then I'd start rearranging them. And there was no question of hearing any mantras or any name of Krishna in that way. The mind certainly will be very tricky. If the mind takes the form of Krishna, let's not complain. It could be doing worse, and sometimes it does do a lot worse. And the question is, how much is Krishna going to manifest there? That's how much we want him to manifest. And that depends upon our what? Surrender, desire, what else? Any? Mercy of Krishna, how much? Yeah, and also all good, and all our bhakti, basically, and Krishna's reciprocation with that as he desires. And then, what would be the characteristics of Krishna's name? This sounds like what goes on in my mind during my japa. What are the? How do you tell the difference? What are the characteristics? Is this really Krishna's form? Is this really Krishna and Balaram? How much is he manifesting? What percentage? Just take it easy and just try to hear Krishna's names. And someone asked me a similar question in a simplified form once, and the question was, how do you know if you're hearing? And that's what the mind does. I'm chanting, I'm listening. Am I really hearing? Yeah, I might be really hearing, but am I really, really hearing? I mean, really, and then I'm just chanting really, 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 and my mind is reeling. Really reeling. So take it easy on yourself and just try to chant Krishna's names and hear one name. It's really good if you... So the question is, how do you know if you're actually hearing Krishna's names? And the answer to that is similar to the answer to this. Are you crying? Are tears pouring from your eyes like torrents of rain? Is your heart completely absorbed in calling Krishna? And is the hairs on your body standing erect in ecstasy? Are you rolling on the ground? And if the answer is no, then you're probably not actually hearing Krishna's names fully. But yet, the very medicine for bringing us to the stage of association with Krishna, because true hearing of Krishna's names means associating with Krishna. And that doesn't mean just being in the presence of Krishna, in the sense that Kamsa was in the presence of Krishna. Krishna was standing right in front of Kamsa. And what did Kamsa do? He drew his sword to protect himself from Krishna, to kill Krishna. So was he in the presence of Krishna? Was Kaliya, that serpent, in the presence of Krishna? Krishna jumped into the water. Of which river? Yamuna. And what was the state of the Yamuna? It was even more polluted than it is now. It was boiling with poison. Has anyone ever been in the presence of sulfuric acid when you're in high school or something like that? What is it like when you're in the presence of sulfuric acid? You probably remember if it ever happened to you. What happens? You remember? The fumes are so heavy, and you put a little anything in there, and the water, and then it boils. You know, it just gives off these fumes, and it's you can't be in the presence. And the lake of the Yamuna was boiling, and birds if you think of sulfuric acid, don't think of sulfuric acid, think of Krishna. But if you have that experience already, you can understand what it was like, that birds flying over that would just die. And all the trees on the branches and all were dead surrounding it. And Krishna jumped in. And he started playing in the water. And Kaliya understood that this was a challenge, and he came and he saw beautiful Krishna standing in front of him. He saw beautiful Krishna, and he immediately bit him on the chest with his poison-filled fangs trying to kill Krishna. So was he actually seeing Krishna? He was appreciating that Krishna was beautiful, but was he actually seeing Krishna? And the answer was no. What causes one to actually see Krishna? Premanjana, churta bhakti valochanena. Because one doesn't see with one's eyes. This is very hard for a conditioned soul to accept. When we look with our eyes, we are not actually seeing reality. And one Mataji told me, who was teaching, Lakshmimoni Mataji told me that one time she was teaching. She was teaching a class of 15 teenage girls. And she had staged in the class that one devotee would come in with his son and have a fight. An argument and then a fight with his young son. And no one knew that this was a planned event. So, and it got very, very heated, the argument. And the father got so angry, it was a drama, and that he threw his son over the railing. And then they went off. And then she said, and I think she was out of the room, the teacher. And then she came in, said, "What happened? What happened while I was out?" And she got, out of the 16 girls, there she got 14 different stories of what happened. and they couldn't even agree on what color everyone's shirts and sweaters were. Sweaters is American for jumper, by the way, in case you don't speak American. So we see, not with our eyes, we're seeing with the concepts of our mind. Just look at this over here. What is this? This one's easier. What's this? A basket. Now, how do you know it's a basket? I mean, it's a stimulation, a sense stimulation on the eyes. But we have the concept of basket. This one's, what is this? It's a desk, it's a table, it's a stand, because we don't have as clear a concept of whatever this is. What is it? A lectern, maybe. Maybe it's properly called a lectern. Huh? A lectern. This is a lectern. So there's a concept of lectern, and when the particular stimulus comes into our mind in that particular shape. What is this over here? This little thing over here. No, not below the camera thing, but a tripod. Okay. What's the characteristics of a tripod? The distinguishing it has three legs. Okay, is this a tripod? It has three legs? Is it? Or is it a microphone stand? Would you call this a tripod? In other words, we could be seeing the same thing, but depending upon how we refined our concepts of things, we'll place it in different categories. And it's like that with people too. We see people and we place them in different categories, we place different things. How do you tell the difference between a horse and a cow? Oh, you tickle it and see if it moves. I don't know. Try to milk it, and if it kicks you, it could be either one. I don't know. But we don't see with our eyes. We're seeing with our minds. We see a fly, and we think one thing. And if a lizard sees a fly, he thinks something else. None of us think food. When we see a fly, I presume. So, to chant Krishna's names and get the full experience of Krishna by Krishna's mercy, we don't have to change our eyes, we have to change our consciousness. And the consciousness that actually sees Krishna as he is the consciousness that's filled with prema, with love for Krishna. And even in Braja, the residents of Vrindavan see Krishna differently. When Mother Yasoda sees Krishna, no matter what, like any mother, it doesn't make a difference how old her son is. She sees him as a little baby, practically speaking. And the Braja Gopikas, the younger gopis, saw Krishna very, very, very differently, and as Krishna's friends do. So everything depends on the consciousness. So what we want to do is purify our consciousness, and not only purify the consciousness, which means removal of impurities, we want to develop love for Krishna. That is our goal. We want to be spontaneously attracted to beautiful Krishna in the mood of service. So much so that what? But we shouldn't first become mad, that Krishna captivates the mind so much one can think of nothing else but Krishna. And this actually is this is what Mahaprabhu demonstrated, and this is the goal of the Bhagavatam. Does anyone know what verse in the Bhagavatam Mahaprabhu said that his Guru Maharaj said? Who is Mahaprabhu's Guru Maharaj? Sripadi Iswarapuri. So he said this, my Guru Maharaj told me that this verse is the essence of the Bhagavatam. And he told it to me again and again. Does anyone know that verse? Evam vratasa priyanama kirtya, from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11:240. We should learn this verse. And it's an amazing verse. Priyanama kirtya. Evam vratasa priyanama kirtya. That when one chants the names of Krishna, which are very dear, and our acharyas give different explanations of this, that are very dear to oneself, the name of Krishna that especially is dear to us, or the name of Krishna which is very dear, evam vratasa priyanama kirtya jatanu raga. Jatanu raga, spontaneously there is an overflowing of ecstasy just by chanting the names of Krishna, never to be imitated. This is the perfection, and this is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. According to the sage, either Havi or Kavi, one of the two, I think it is Havir. Hasyat yato rodita rauti gayanti unmaravan nityadi lokabaya. That means, through the ecstasy, when one's heart is erupting with love for Krishna, one will cry, one will dance, one will fall to the ground, one will hasyati, laugh, nrityadi, dancing. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives a comment on this verse and describes the leela, a leela that could make a devotee do all these things. Because one who has perfected his consciousness, he's in touch with Krishna. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada said, for a devotee, an exalted devotee, it is like he is watching the television of Krishna's lila within his heart. It's actually manifest in his heart. So Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives an example of a lila that can manifest all these conflicting emotions. One after the other, crying and laughing, falling to the ground, dancing, lokobaya, without caring for others, what the people are thinking. So of course this is the uttama stage, and never to be imitated. But we should know what Krishna consciousness is. It's out of this world. And the great uttama bhagavatas, they cannot be in this world. They cannot preach because they have a completely different vision. But rather they have to act, they have to bring their consciousness for service to the madhyam level, the intermediate level. So it's one's consciousness. And how to purify our consciousness? Chant Krishna's holy names. But we also have to desire to become purified. And our desires, certainly in the beginning, will be self-centered too. Oh, I want to chant because it makes me happy, because I want to see Krishna, because I'm suffering so much, because it's good for business or whatever, who knows what. But, you know, different thoughts at different times come in my mind. But it all has to do with me. But yet, this is bhava oshud. This is the medicine as well as on the highest level. It's the ecstasy of those who are actually on that higher level of consciousness. So we don't imitate, but we take the medicine. And that's one of the most important principles of Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness movement. We don't imitate. We try to move the pretense from our hearts. But yet, we follow the process. Another question. See if we can find a little one. But sometimes on little pieces of paper are hidden big questions. There's less words. In devotee's life, whatever good or bad happens, is it because of his past karma or Krishna's will? In a devotee's life, what happens to him, is it because of his past karma or Krishna's will? Okay, all those who think it's past karma, raise your hand. All those who think it's Krishna's will, raise your hand. All those who think they're devotees, raise your hand. No one's going to raise their hand to that one. So which is it? It's a very mysterious combination. Because here we are with this body, and there's one verse that many of us know that actually describes the vision of a devotee when it comes to dealing with how life is treating him. Because usually we're better at dealing with how life is treating someone else and giving them advice, that when the piano lands on my head, it's more difficult to deal with it than when it lands on somebody else's head. Then it's very easier. Even in a sensitive way. And that's why we need the association of devotees one of the reasons to help us deal with life. And it's not an easy thing to face one's fate within life. That's what I've seen. Especially in Kali Yuga, everyone's fate is up and down and up and down and so mixed, at least that's tendency is there. So it's very difficult to deal with one's fate in a Krishna conscious way, to face one's life, to face Krishna in the form of our fate. So, is it Krishna or our karma? And the devotee ultimately sees it's Krishna. But does our karma have anything to do with it? Krishna seems to generally work through it. I have a particular body. This is called Parabdha karma, the manifest karma. And I have a particular voice, particular abilities, particular specific debilities that come along with my body, my karma, my mind, certain impressions in my consciousness. So the question is, does Krishna change that for a devotee? Or can Krishna change it? Now that makes it easier. Can Krishna change it? Does he have the ability? If he's there, he certainly has the ability. That's the meaning. He's all powerful. Does he? Who has that? I don't quite want to do that one. I know, for example, that my karma or my hand changed. One of the lines of my hand drastically changed over the last years. That means fate. Krishna does. In the Bhagavatam, in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhaktivedanta Sindhu describes that by clapping one's hands in front of the deities, the lines of one's palms change. But yet Krishna generally uses our fate to bring us towards him. But the verse, what is the verse we refer to when we talk about how to deal with one's fate? Say, everyone together. Say it. Yeah, who knows this verse? We'll say it together. Tate anukampam susamikshamano bunjane vatma kripa babakakam purvam vidadanam namaste jivateyo muktipade sadayabak. This verse means that when one, in one's fate, teaches us how to meet one's fate with Krishna consciousness. To see how kind Krishna is, to see his hand in everything that happens to us. Seeing that I deserve worse when something bad happens to me, and therefore Krishna has so kindly minimized it. Now, generally, when something bad happens to me, I don't think I deserve worse, and Krishna has minimized it. My tendency is to think, I didn't deserve this bad thing at all. Why is Krishna letting it happen to me? Because I'm so innocent, and I never do anything wrong. And I never have ever done anything wrong, either in this life or in previous lives. Now, it's so ridiculous, obviously. But rather, when something bad happens to me, especially if there's a person who is the instrument of it happening, the serpent arises, the fangs come out. How dare you do this to me, say this to me, think this about me? Do you know who I am? You will find out. Sounds a lot like Kamsa, doesn't it? Well, we do have Kamsa. Well, then how dare you do this to me? I'm allowed to do it to everyone else. But how dare you? This is called false ego. This is the manifestation of false ego. This is what false ego does. Causes us to imagine ourselves in the center, central position, in Krishna's position. It is based on enmity with Krishna. It is based on envy. It is based on pride, false ego. So, the devotee sees when something happens to him, and again I say it's much easier to preach to others than when it's happening to me. When the piano falls, someone's walking down the street, one of my devotee friends, and a piano falls on his head, and it's Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. Huh? Could have been worse. It could have been two pianos. And they usually, thanks, I really needed that. And when something better, good happens to me, to see, actually, I didn't deserve this. And this is, but Krishna's so kind that he's supporting my life far beyond what I actually deserve. And usually, my consciousness is just the opposite, amazingly enough for a conditioned soul. It's just the opposite. When something bad happens, I think I don't deserve it. And when something good happens, I think, well, it's almost enough according to what I really deserve. Well, maybe not as quite as much, because I am me. So the verse continues, Rigvada Rapuram Vedana Namaste, that the person, when he meets his fate, he's always, on all levels, mind, body, words, paying his obeisances to Krishna and seeing Krishna's mercy in it. And such a person, with such consciousness, Jivateo Mukti Pade Sadayabak, he is actually fit to be in the spiritual world. He inherits the kingdom of God as naturally as the son inherits the property of the father, Dayavak. Huh? I will tell you the first words. I could tell you the source of it. It's Bhagavatam, and it's in the 10th canto. But the first words are Tate. I could even tell you what chapter. But you find it. Enjoy. Enjoy searching the Bhagavatam. It is a wonderful book. It is the most wonderful book. So easy to answer the questions. Very difficult to actually practice it. But because it's easy to answer the questions, to understand theoretically what to do, and not as easy to do it, that is not a bad thing. I mean, it could be better, but it's not a bad thing, because we should know what the ideal is. If we don't even have a concept of what is proper and what is improper, then what hope do we have of acting properly if we don't know the difference between left and right? What hope do we have of following directions when someone says to go right? If we don't know, at least theoretically, what is proper and what is improper, the ideal way to the ideal consciousness, then there's no hope. But we shouldn't think that theoretical understanding is everything. Mm-hmm. We are meant to read and apply. And what happens when we fall short of applying it? Yes, we're supposed to become humble. Yes, we become humble. But we shouldn't be proud of our humility. Yes, I'm not following. No, it's heartbreaking. But it's false ego breaking. To come to grips with one's limitation, and one could say that's maturity. When we're young and young devotees, we think, why can't everyone just, why doesn't everyone? But then later we find out why doesn't everyone. It's because this material world is a very, very heavy place. And the influence of Maya is very strong. What verse in the Bhagavad Gita? And very difficult to overcome. Yeah. It is very influential. Influential means it influences our consciousness. But we look at it as very influential because it attacks us at our weakest points. The material energy attacks us at our weakest points. That's Maya. And for the great devotees, they don't have weak points. Because they feel themselves only weak, so therefore they're all fully sincere, and they're always taking shelter of Krishna fully. So they don't. So the weak comes from the strength, from feeling I'm strong here and weak here. But the great devotees are fully dependent on Krishna. Maya me tantaranti te. They are fully dependent on Krishna. They don't feel they can proceed by their own power even a little. And therefore they are strong. And that's, in one sense, the art of Krishna consciousness, turning weakness to strength by taking shelter of Krishna. Because in this world, everyone is weak. Ultimately, no one wins. We can say, sometimes it seems like, you know, why some in the material world, the people who are evil and bad and do so many horrible things, so many of them are so successful. But are they actually successful? Does anyone succeed in this world, actually? Who's the person who has succeeded? But someone in this world, not in that world. Who succeeds in this world? Name one person. But in this world, everyone knows what success is. It's, who succeeds? None of you want to play with me here. Okay. Okay, we'll change the game. No one succeeds. Everyone is conquered. Everyone is crushed. Everyone's empire turns into powder, dust, ashes. Everyone dies. And not only that, everyone's family dies. Raise your hand if you've read the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. Ah, nice. I recently had to teach it, which made me, as one would imagine, pay more attention as I was reading it. And I saw it as a very mysterious, short, but powerful canto. And I divided it, because I tend to analyze the way, this is the pleasure, Krishna willing, the greatest pleasure of my life. Is just looking at these books and seeing how they fit together and what is really being said here. And I saw something that struck me in the first six chapters. The first two chapters of the 12th canto describe the a succession of kings, very similar to the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam. Just a listing of kings, one after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next. And this king was so great, and he did this wonderful, incredible thing, and his son's name was such and such, and his son had five sons, and his son's son had seven sons, and this one was especially powerful, and he did this in the world, and then he had two sons. And just the passing of names, no matter how great one was, he was just a name in a list. And then Kali Yuga was approaching. And then after a certain point, all the kings became of low character, like thieves. And yet there was a succession on and on. And then it comes to the point, because who is speaking there? Yeah, or... Sukadeva speaking tomorrow's Prakrit. And then he gives some final instructions to Maharaj Prakrit, and he said, "Do you have any more questions?" And he said, "No." "But I have a request. Please give me permission to withdraw my consciousness from this world and just focus it on Krishna. You've already given me everything. You've given me the content. Because without content, what will our consciousness do? How can we think about Krishna without content? You've given me everything already. You've answered my questions. Just let me focus my consciousness on Krishna. And I'm ready to go." And this actually was what Maharaj Prakrit asked for in Canto 1 when he was at the beginning. He just asked, "Please speak about Krishna." So then all the sages and Maharaj Prakrit worshipped Sukadev. And you know what Sukadev did? He left. He stood up and walked away. It was practically minutes before Maharaj Prakrit was going to leave. He stood up and walked away. We won't at this point discuss why, but this is how he was inspired by Krishna. And then Maharaj Prakrit just withdrew himself, focused his consciousness, hearing, chanting, glorifying Krishna, thinking about Krishna, because he was a devotee. And then he left. And then the snake bird came and bit him. And our acharyas say the snake birds coming and biting him was like the burning of the body by the son after the departure of the father. He had already gone. Focused fully on hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then Sukadev is gone and Maharaj Prakrit is gone. But the Bhagavatam is not yet over. So the rest of the Bhagavatam, starting in the middle of chapter 6 of the 12th canto, is just spoken by who? Sukta Goswami. And he describes the Vedic literature, the totality of the Vedic literature. And he says that the Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedic literature. Now this first part of the 12th canto has a message for us, which I shall get to in a moment. Then the second part in describing the Vedic literature, and one of the conclusions is the Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedic literatures, is he mentions the Markandeya Purana. Who mentions? Sutta Goswami. And then who asks him about the Markandeya Purana? Shonaka Rishi. Please tell us about Markandeya Purana. So then there are three chapters or so that describe, maybe three, I think, that describe Markandeya Rishi. Now, Markandeya Rishi, I won't tell the whole story of him, but he, incredible Puranic story, and previous life, and this life, he was saved from death, and then he had the benediction of living for, I think, seven manvantaras, which is a really long time, millions and millions of years. And then he was performing austerities, and Indra tested him and couldn't distract his mind, because he actually could distract his mind a little bit, but he controlled it. He brought so many celestial damsels to dance in front of him, and Indra became afraid because he controlled his mind, and he was afraid he was going to get burnt to ashes by the anger of the sage. And then Narayan Rishi is so pleased with him, he benedicts him with whatever he wants, and he asks him, what do you want? And he said, I want to see your Maya. So then he said, okay. Then he went back to his ashram. Markandeya Rishi went back to them. Suddenly this huge storm started coming, and it just engulfed the entirety of the universe. And Markandeya Rishi was on the waves of the destruction, the waters of destruction, for millions of years, to the end of the next Manvantar, and he was suffering like anything. He wasn't surfing and waiting for the next good wave. He was simply suffering for millions and millions and millions of years. And then he saw, upon the waters of devastation, this banyan leaf. And who was on the banyan leaf? Asatat. Krishna was there. And he was so attracted to this boy, Krishna. And suddenly that little boy, baby, baby, baby Krishna, started breathing in. And the entirety of the waters of devastation and Markandeya Rishi was sucked within the body of this little boy. The entirety of the material creation was in there, and Markandeya Rishi saw that all the universal elements and everything in existence was inside the body of this, of Krishna. And then the boy was in there for so long, and then the boy exhaled, and then he was back in the waters again, and then suddenly he was back in his ashram again. And then, because he was a devotee of Lord Shiva, he was a Vaishnava, but Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he was a devotee. Lord Shiva was his beloved Lord, and in his worship of Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, he was a Vaishnava. And then Lord Shiva and Parvati benedicted him. He asked him, what do you want? This time he didn't say, I want to see your Maya. He's had enough of Maya. Have you had enough? All the Bhagavatam is very powerful. And then what he asked for, and I only, unfortunately, I, But he basically asked for the ability to hear and chant about Krishna. So, the first part of the 12th canto, Maharaj Prickett, how long did he have to live? 7 days. And his conclusion? Just focus your consciousness on hearing and chanting about Krishna. And Markandeya Rishi, the second part of the 12th canto, how long did he have to live? Millions and millions and millions and millions and millions. I mean, a long time. Years. And what is his conclusion? That I should focus my mind on Krishna and hear my consciousness on Krishna. So whether you're living for 7 days or 7 manvantaras, it's the same thing. What we have to do, our mission, our job, our perfection. It's somehow or another become absorbed in thoughts about Krishna. Yes, we have our fate to meet in Krishna's hands. Krishna is the ultimate bestower on the devotee. But let us meet our fate in the association of devotees and hear and chant about Krishna and become absorbed in loving thoughts about Krishna. That is our perfection. And then the third part of the 12th canto. That's amazing. That's the first time I've heard the dog bark. That's the little one, right? The big one. Yeah? He sat him down and said, listen. Yes. You didn't tell him what time the retreat ended, obviously. Either that or he didn't bring his mobile phone with him and he doesn't know what time it is. So the third part of the 12th canto, it glorifies Srimad Bhagavatam. In the next to last chapter, it summarizes it. And the last chapter glorifies the Bhagavatam because it gives Krishna. It gives Krishna to us. And the question is, of course, do we want to take what it is giving? Puranako dunoditaha. The Son of Krishna has arisen in Kali Yuga to give light where there is darkness. What do we mean that there's darkness in Kali Yuga? Huh? Lack of Krishna, but not lack of darkness. But what's an example of the darkness that is of the opulences of Kali Yuga? I don't know if I should bring this question up, but tamasic, okay, such as? Yes, that's the kind of. So there's movies everywhere, just everything. You go in advertisement; it's all there. Everything that will expand to make you think that your body and your mind is in your face all the time, in front of your eyes, continuously, an endless barrage. It's like if you're strong. And someone hits you, and you're strong, and it doesn't faze you. If you're weak, one hit, one punch, and you're out. But if you're strong, one doesn't faze you. But what happens, even if you're strong, if you're continuously being pummeled, and beaten, and hit, continuously, in every part of your body and mind, no matter how strong you are, you find out that you're not strong or you're not strong enough. That's Kali's plan. One television channel, two, three, seven, eight, 80, 100, 200. The internet, unlimited. Unlimited things, objects for you to place in your consciousness, to give you sanskaras in your consciousness that will keep you bouncing around the tree of material existence forever. That's to fill us with unlimited desires, which means unlimited dissatisfaction and anger and envy and longings and plans and passion degraded to ignorance continuously. That's Kali Yuga. Virtual reality. Illusion within an illusion. And it's powerful. And Kali's not over. It's just beginning. The fun's just starting. And then you have all that people are living in these illusory worlds. And then suddenly different realities hit. Like there's no money. And diseases and wars. You know, war isn't the thing that you watch on television. There are real people crying. Real houses being exploded. Real bombs. Real chemical weapons. Real biological manipulations. And the poor people are so easily bought off with sense gratification and the promise, so many promises Kali Yuga makes for happiness. Promises. But what does Kali Yuga actually deliver? Are people more wealthy or less wealthy? More happy, less happy. More in anxiety, less in anxiety. But people don't want to think. I shouldn't say people don't want to think, but many people don't want to think, and the people that do want to think or do notice that things are going terribly have terrible solutions or impersonal solutions. So there's a very nice solution that's given in the last verse of the Bhagavatam. Does anyone know that one? The final verse of the whole Bhagavatam. Nama Sankirtana Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam Sarva. I don't know the whole thing at this very moment. But it starts Nama Sankirtana Yasya. And because if we just take shelter, I offer my obeisance, Pranami Harim Param, that I offer my obeisances to Lord Hari, whose name, when chanted in Sankirtan, removes all sin. And whom, when paid obeisances to, removes all misery. To him I offer my humble obeisances. Harim Param. That's how the Bhagavatam ends. The Bhagavatam wants to give us the holy names. So we should take the Bhagavatam, we should take the holy names, we should take the association of devotees, we should take the worship of Sisi Gonatai, Jagannath Baladeva Subhadradevi, Radha Balava, and what's the fifth one? We should take living in a holy place, and Dham, and very soon we should take Prasadam also. Now, there are many, many, many more questions here. I'll answer one more now, but we're not going to neglect the rest of them. We probably won't get to all of them. And then we shall end this morning. The pink question. While hearing the name of Krishna, what should the mind be thinking of? Okay. Raise your hand if you could. You'll help me answer this question, if you could so kindly do so. Yes, Paul. Okay, but that's the most basic thing. According to our consciousness, we'll think of different things. So, for the greatest devotees, they're thinking of Krishna's pastimes as they're chanting. They're playing in the ocean of Krishna's pastimes and interacting as they're chanting. And there's not a disparity between their chanting and concentration on Krishna. Then on a next level, maybe they're thinking of Krishna's qualities. That, oh, Krishna is so kind. It's just natural, but their concentration is complete. There's not a duality. And then on the next level of Krishna's form. And then on the level that we... But those occur by Krishna's mercy. They manifest. But when we're chanting, but what's in our own power is to make the attempt to just hear the sound vibration of Krishna's names. So what should be filling our consciousness on the simplest level is the sound vibration, just touching the sound vibration with our consciousness, in other words, hearing. And this is basically the basic instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave us about chanting. Srila Prabhupada, it is very difficult to control my mind when I chant. It wanders. So what is the controlling of the mind? You have to chant and hear. That's all. You have to chant with your tongue and the sound you hear. That's all. What is the question of mind? So that's the basic instruction, and that, with our own determination and willpower, we can actually try to do, to try to hear one holy name of Krishna, to try to hear, to touch Krishna with our consciousness by the process of hearing. That we can make our attempt to do. We may succeed, we may not succeed, we may succeed some of the time, we may succeed. Because it depends on the nature of our minds and how much they're inflicted with passion and ignorance. In a sattva mind, that it's simpler, but this is Kali Yuga. So we try our best to hear and don't make it complicated and let Krishna reciprocate with our sincere attempt to hear the holy name as he likes. Let it be based on hearing. That was the basic instruction of Prabhupada. So then Prabhupada was also asked, should we think about Krishna's lila, pastimes when we're chanting? And Prabhupada said, yes, that's a perfection. But in the beginning, and don't try to be artificial, don't imitate. So we look at a picture of Krishna when we chant? Okay, if it helps you hearing. Should we look at the syllables of the holy name? There are quite a few devotees who do that, actually recommended also by Srila Gokrishwan Das Babaji Maharaj. Syllables of the holy name? Yes, if it helps your hearing. But keep the hearing essential. And accept what helps your hearing. But if we start thinking, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, what should I be thinking of? What should I think of now? Krishna, I should think of the form of Krishna. Okay, what's he wearing? Which form of Krishna is he wearing? Where is it? What time is it anyway? And how long do I have to keep on going in this? And anyway, I haven't downloaded my email in 7 seconds. So I must do it again, quickly. And and on, don't crank up the mind. Keep it simple. And when we actually are in touch with Krishna on our own level, even, it's wonderful. When the consciousness touches Krishna, it's wonderful. So let the mind be full of the sound vibration. And therefore, because and kirtan, because it's musical and all the devotees together and there's dancing and singing, the sankirtan, the loud chanting of Krishna's names together is easier because it's more captivating for the mind. So we should hear and chant Krishna's names in sankirtan too. And to chant in front of Radha Balava is so wonderful. Okay, so we'll end here. Any comments? Announcements? Okay, so end the class now, and please stay and fill it out. And so, give best if everyone gives it back to you now, if you possibly can. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Gaurathai ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Balava ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki jai, Krishna Balaram ki jai, Sri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Balava Bhaktivinoda ki jai.